with such a profound and prolific problem into the right direction. I'd like to start off tonight with just kind of a backdrop or a background on thyroid disease for those of you who are just tuning in. Thyroid disease affects approximately 13 million cases of thyroid diseases are diagnosed currently in America, and that's kind of a rough guesstimation, but it's suspected, at least in the medical literature, that more than 26 million Americans are affected by thyroid disorder. They're just not diagnosed. Commonly, the symptoms of thyroid conditions can include heat or cold insensitivities. In other words, your hands or your feet get really cold even though the weather may be warm outside. Depression, muscle and joint pain can exist, cramping, inability to concentrate, fatigue, exercise intolerance. A little less known side effect of having low thyroid or hypothyroid is high cholesterol. Excuse me. High cholesterol can be a manifestation of low thyroid, as well as constipation and very, very dry skin. There are several blood tests that doctors will use to help diagnose or to help in the diagnosis of thyroid disease. And you may have heard of some of these related TSH, which stands for thyroid-stimulating hormone, T3, as well as T4, are standard workups that doctors often will order on you to once again, try to help determine whether or not you have an imbalance in thyroid hormone. So kind of as a basic starting point, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Dr. Davis and let her give us a little bit of her experience treating thyroid disease and talk a little bit about what she does. Go ahead, Dr. Davis.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Osborne. I practiced in traditional family practice for several years and was very frustrated. I would encounter many patients who would come in and describe many of those symptoms that you just discussed. They would come in and tell me that they were tired, more tired than they would expect with their average day. They were gaining weight. They were having constipation or dry skin. Their hair was falling out. They couldn't think clearly. I mean, they just knew that their body was dramatically changing. And I would test those levels, as you had mentioned, and found, of course, that they would be in the, quote, normal range and would, you know, call them back with that unhappy phone call that everything was normal. So really the thyroid cannot be the problem. Well, fortunately, I've changed my ways and have found that really it's much more important to listen to the patient, listen to their constellation of symptoms, and really use those lab values to be more of a guideline. So I do test TSH levels, but I also test free hormone levels and antibody levels towards the thyroid gland. And with that and the information that the patient tells me, I really look more for a decline in function. I think we have come to treat thyroid disease in traditional medicine as basically a very black and white disease. So it either the thyroid is working or it's not. And we've not taken into account the degree of decline that the thyroid can have over several years. So from the ages of about 20 to 50, we notice about a 50% decline in the actual function of the thyroid gland. Now, that's not going to affect every human being, but if we look at a whole constellation of symptoms from the ages of 20 to 50, you start to notice around your 30s and 40s that you're not as sharp, that you're forgetting, that you're starting to have that weight gain despite the same kind of diet and exercise that you have been doing. And I think it becomes just such a frustration because we don't treat that appropriately. I think the elevated cholesterol is a huge marker. Once I've been able to treat these patients for their underactive thyroid, their cholesterol numbers come back to normal. We don't have to give them statin drugs and Lipitor, all these drugs that we don't necessarily need to lower cholesterol. So in my experience over the past 3 to 3.5 years in my current practice, listening to the patient, checking the different levels, and really listening to where their symptoms lie really helps guide me in their current treatment. I hope that was helpful.
That was very helpful. So aside from, I kind of think what you were saying is basically that you're not just relying on the lab tests, so you're not really just treating a laboratory result. You're actually treating, you're using that as a tool and a marker to help guide you with patient symptoms and exam and everything else.
Correct. And there's a whole gray zone. I mean, I can, you know, come back and tell a patient, well, I think you're thyroid's declined 20% or 50% or 80% or it's heading straight downhill, and we have antibody production going on, so we know that there are certain other elements that create a problem with actually coming up with the, quote, diagnosis of hypothyroidism. What's very frustrating in traditional medicine is that we're led to believe we have to follow a box. If you're under that box or over that box, then we can treat you. But if you're within that reference range or that box, we cannot treat you. And despite the fact that you tell us you have so many different symptoms, and that's what I've learned to now, you know, we just cannot keep continuing to treat within that box because we're missing so many true hypothyroid or even hyperthyroid patients that way.
And what's also interesting of note is a lot of these lab values will change from one region of the country to another, and primarily they're based on a standard deviation bell curve, meaning that we throw away the top and bottom 1%. And so if somebody has an abnormally high or an abnormally low number, we're not using those in the actual values or data that we take to establish what is normal and what is abnormal.
Correct. Several different laboratories have different reference ranges that can store anywhere from 0.4 to 4.5 to 0.4 to 3. Some still continue to be 0.4 to 5.5, and of course, as that number continues to get higher, is when we'll finally decide to treat someone for an underactive thyroid,
right,
in traditional medicine, of course. And so it's really changed. The laboratories have changed. Endocrinologists really have come up with a consensus that 3 should be a good cutoff value with symptoms, but we haven't actually put that into practice yet in traditional medicine.
So the science is there and the evidence is there. It's just not a part of what the standard body of medicine is doing today.
Correct.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more on thyroid disorder. I'd like to open the invitation to call in. The number here, 281-578-5738. That's 281-578-5738. It's a toll-free call on your Verizon Wireless at pound KSEV. We'll be back shortly.
Tired of being thick around the middle? Does your skin flap like a chicken when you wave goodbye? Are those saddlebags getting on your nerves? Well, Cool Lipo is here, and the results are amazing. As we grow older, our skin begins to show the signs of sun and lifestyle. The face and neck are exposed to the sun more than any other part of the body and tend to age more quickly. And we look for expensive creams and lotions to erase the signs of aging, and some people even consider surgery. At Woodlands Wellness and Cosmetic Center, we can perform Cool Lipo, a non-surgical procedure, in our office. And there's no downtime, and it takes less time than a trip to the grocery store. Consider Cool Lipo to remove fatty tissue under the chin, neck, arms, abdomen, and even thighs. Call Woodlands Wellness and Cosmetic Center today for more information at 281-362-0014. We'll have you back in swimsuit shape in no time at all. Call us at 281-362-0014 for your Cool Lipo consultation. 281-362-0014.
Check them out on the web at www.woodlandswellness.com.
You take vitamins every day, but how can you be sure you're getting all the nutrients you need to stay healthy? Most of us try to stay fit, but how many of us know exactly how healthy we actually are? In fact, studies show that 50% of people who take vitamins have deficiencies that can suppress immune function and contribute to chronic illness. SpectraCell's patented blood test measures vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants in the body's cells to determine if you're getting all you need. For more information in the name of a clinician near you, go to www.spectracell.com or call 713-621-3101.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Have you been put on medications to treat your symptoms because doctors have been unable to identify the cause of your depression and fatigue? Have you tried thyroid hormones without great success? Then call Town Center Wellness today. That phone number, 281-240-2229. Symptoms of hypothyroidism such as fatigue, depression, and mental sluggishness have all been linked to nutritional deficiencies. Now, if you have any of these deficiencies, medications might help initially, but they will be of little benefit in the long run. At Town Center Wellness, you will be seen by a doctor who is board certified in clinical nutrition and has the ability to detect your deficiencies and customize a nutritional prescription based on your unique needs. Quit guessing about your health and call Town Center Wellness today. 281-240-2229. and schedule your appointment. That's 281-240-2229. Town Center Wellness, 281-240-2229.
Back, everybody. Here we are tonight with Dr. Osborne. We're talking about thyroid dysfunction, low thyroid or hypothyroid. There's a number of ways we can call, or we can, there's a number of synonyms we can use to discuss it. But bottom line is when your thyroid doesn't work, doesn't produce enough thyroid hormone. We were just talking with Dr. Davis about lab values and how those are not always indicative of low thyroid. Just by themselves, without looking at patient history, without looking at patient symptoms, to use as an adjunct. I'd like to get in a little bit to now about some of the causes, the different types of causes or contributing factors to thyroid disease, because really I think the real great answer lies in identifying causes so that then we can address potential things in the environment or in the patient themselves to bring about changes, to bring about resolution of the condition. And I've got Dr. Merritt here tonight, and I wanted to get her input a little bit on heavy metal toxicity and how these types of things can affect the thyroid gland. And Dr. Merritt, I'll go ahead and let you take off from there.
Well, thank you. You know, you're right. There are a lot of people who don't have abnormal numbers, but they definitely have abnormal function. And there's this thing called endocrine disruption where the gland is disrupted. It doesn't work. And yet when you do the blood tests that they're normal, because it works on a cellular level, it plugs in. So the blood levels are normal, but the thyroid hormone that's out there can't work. One of the classic ones is perchlorate or rocket fuel. And, you know, there's a lot of groundwater contamination with that in certain areas of the country. And it works by blocking the iodine uptake. And as you know, iodine deficiency is one of the major causes of hypothyroidism. So in our practice, we, you know, not only identify it, but we look for causes such as iodine deficiency or zinc and selenium deficiency, you know, all the different things along the spectrum that you need to form thyroid hormone. And so it's not just one thing, and as I learned early on, the thyroid gland, the numbers don't really mean anything. I go more by the symptoms than anything else.
Let me ask you, I use iodine loading tests very commonly in my practice to help evaluate iodine status. It's not a common practice of mainstream medicine.
Are you talking about the painting on the iodine?
I'm talking about basically a load where you take a Lugol solution and you do a 24-hour urine output to measure iodine uptake into the thyroid gland. It was a test that was commonly done about 50 years ago. It's no longer being done. I just wanted to get your input on why doctors aren't trying to measure, or many doctors don't try to measure iodine as a tool or a marker. A lot of doctors I see are just relying on TSH primarily as a main indicator for disease.
Well, you know, everything in medicine goes in cycles, and you're right about that. That is kind of the classic teaching right now, but most people that have been around a while have abandoned that and go more by symptoms at this point. There's also two big endocrine societies, and one of them is a lot more proponent of treating the lower TSHs and treating people with normal thyroid hormones but positive antibodies. There's studies that show that if you treat, and this is, of course, with medication, but if you treat people who have the symptoms, who have positive antibodies, in a year they have a lot less antibodies than the people you didn't treat, and they feel a lot better. Subjectively, they feel like 50% better than the people you don't treat. So I'm all for individualizing it for the patient. I was curious what you thought about when you were talking about iodine loading. Someone showed me at a conference once how to paint the Google solution on skin and watch how many hours it took to absorb the yellow mark. Have you used that test?
No, that's not one I use. Actually, it's the just using the Lugol solution in tablet form,
uh-huh.
And it's an ingestion of 50 milligrams,
I
and
see.
Then a urinary catch of 20 over the 24-hour period. And we're looking for a 90% uptake of iodine. In other words, we're measuring that urinary output. If we don't see 90% uptake or 90% of that being absorbed or not coming out in the urine, then we're concerned that the iodine gland itself, the organ itself, is not, it's not saturated with iodine, and it's not, well, not saturated, it's not absorbing the iodine properly.
Right.
And so then we look at potential causes for that lack of absorption, and oftentimes we look at supplementation with higher levels of iodine.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because that, and you know, we're supposedly not supposed to have a big iodine deficiency because, you know, it's in our iodized salt and things, but I think there's a much higher level. Plus, I think that there are chemicals in our environment, like the perchlorate and the rocket fuel type stuff, that actually block the uptake of iodine. And not only do you have those sorts of things blocking the iodine, you have prescription medicines that block the conversion of T4 to T3, you know, the active form of thyroid. And so I think a lot of people on beta blockers and different heart medications have a natural block of the T4 to T3 conversion, and they're very symptomatic.
Well, I would agree, and I'll go one step further. There were some studies that came out on estrogen. Estrogen increasing overall T4, and as well as increasing thyroid binding globulin, which binds up T3 and prevents it from actually being able to activate the cell itself. And what we see today as a trend, generally speaking, is a lot of young females taking hormone replacements with, you know, with estrogen in them as a method of birth control. And so, you know, the kind of one of the questions that I've, you know, contemplated often is, are we setting these young women up by giving them something that it could potentially contribute to the development of low thyroid function?
Well, that's interesting, because the thyroglobulin that T4 and estrogen both, or the hormone that they both bind to or compete for, I've noticed that, like, when people are pregnant, or, you know, there's major shifts of thyroid as there are major shifts of estrogen, you know, during the different trimesters. And women that are going through menopause, is sometimes, you know, are the symptoms from thyroid, or are they from, you know, swings in estrogen? And so you have to sort all that out. But there's definitely, I've noticed, this is just, you know, this isn't published or anything, but this is just something I've noticed, is that a lot of people on fake hormones, not necessarily estradiol, but like Premarin and some of these synthetic hormones, I see a lot more thyroid antibodies, a lot more T3 hyperthyroidism, and disruptions of the normal thyroid panels.
Dr. Davis, is that something? I know you treat a lot more of this, especially in your past with medicine. Is that a trend that you've seen as well? Or
absolutely, I see. You know, the younger girls with the birth control pills right now, I actually have them tested while they're on their birth control pill, then I have them stop it for a couple of months, and I test them again, and their values range, I mean, hugely. They can be anywhere from 1 or 2 or less when they're on the birth control pills, and when I check them again, their TSH can be up to 3 or 4. So I think that our values are artificially incorrect when they're actually on the birth control pills. So I agree wholeheartedly that the estrogen has a lot to do with it. I see a lot of women from a hysterectomy actually start to have more and more problems with their thyroid that goes undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. That's a huge problem. We see they have a hysterectomy with or without ovaries, and suddenly they start to gain weight, and again, that whole cycle of symptoms begins, and we have more and more of those same symptoms starting. So again, I think it just is the plain fact is that you need to recognize the symptoms, and you can't just simply state that here you are in this reference range of normal, when that doesn't really apply to that individual patient.
Dr. Davis, one of the things that some of the thyroid books, you know, always want you to do is take basal temperatures. And while I found that to be very useful in younger patients whose hypothalamus is still working, I don't find it to be particularly helpful in my older patients. What's your experience with that?
I agree with that as well, although I'll have a lot of patients who will try that. They'll come in and they've tested it for 3 or 4 days, and their temperatures will range anywhere from 96.5 to 97, and they'll come and let me know that. But I agree that most of the time it works better in the younger.
So did we lose them? Okay, I think we had some malfunction there. We'll get Dr. Davis back up here just momentarily. For those of you who aren't aware of what basal temperature is basically measuring the body temperature first thing in the morning before getting up and becoming active. And typically the basal temperature should be greater than 97.5 degrees that first thing in the morning. If it's consistently lower than around 97.2, then that's one of the clinical indicators or clinical suspicions that that there is actually a low thyroid present. And so basically that's a basal temperature, as Dr. Davis was referring to. Do we have her back up? Yeah, I think we have her coming up here in just a minute. Okay, she's back on. Dr. Davis, I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Okay. Okay. Well, you were just talking about the basal body temperature, and I was just saying that I actually have seen that it does work better in the younger patients than in our older population. But again, it's a good gauge to see what that first rise in temperature is and what happens first thing in the morning before you get up and become active.
Now, Dr. Osborne, you were mentioning earlier you have an approach for the thyroiditis that's more autoimmune.
I do. As autoimmune disease, it's basically, for those of you who aren't aware, autoimmune disease is when your body produces antibodies that attacks your own cells. And so from a diet perspective, we're very aware that that there are certain food constituents and proteins in foods that can actually help to trigger autoimmune diseases. And one of the most commonly known is a disease called celiac disease, which is a disease where a person has an immune response to a protein in wheat, oats, barley, or rye. This protein called gluten, or gluten sensitivity being another name for it, can actually contribute and trigger autoimmune disease. Well, and because it's the only known cause for autoimmune disease, at least dietary, then we actually, in my office, we actually look for gluten sensitivity on a regular basis for patients who come in with thyroid dysfunction, especially when their antibodies are elevated, because when they have elevations in antibodies, we tend to think autoimmune. And so knowing that gluten is one of the major contributors or causes of an autoimmune reaction, we want to rule that out from an environmental perspective and make sure that we can eliminate gluten from their diet if it needs to be eliminated.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
We're getting ready to take our next break here. If you want to call in, the number is 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. We encourage any calls you may have, and we'll be back shortly.
Do you suffer from high blood pressure, chronic pain, memory loss, arthritis, hardening of the arteries, cataracts, or fibromyalgia? Recent NIH studies have shown that 38% of U.S. adults have blood lead levels that put them at a higher risk for a variety of health problems. To get tested for lead toxicity, call 800-360-3382. That's 800-360-3382.
Dr. Dorothy Merritt, the founder of the Chelation Centers of Texas, is board certified in internal medicine and has dedicated over 20 years to treating patients suffering from the effects of lead toxicity. To get tested, call 800-360-3382. Lead is the silent killer. Get tested, get treated. 800-360-3382.
Does your child do poorly in school due to poor focus and lack of attention? Are you being pressured by teachers and doctors to put your child on medication to treat ADD or ADHD, but are nervous about the potential side effects of the medications, such as poor appetite and delayed growth? In today's fast-paced society, most children's diets are inadequate and provide large quantities of refined sugars with minimal vitamins and minerals. Nutritional deficiencies are very common in children diagnosed with ADD and ADHD and have been shown to have a strong relationship with such abnormal behavior. A safe and natural alternative exists. To find out more on how you can help your child without the side effects of medications, call Town Center Wellness today at 281-240-2229. Town Center Wellness, 281-240-2229.
You take vitamins every day, but how can you be sure you're getting all the nutrients you need to stay healthy? Most of us try to stay fit, but how many of us know exactly how healthy we actually are? In fact, studies show that 50% of people who take vitamins have deficiencies that can suppress immune function and contribute to chronic illness. SpectraCell's patented blood test measures vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants in the body's cells to determine if you're getting all you need. For more information and the name of a clinician near you, go to www.spectracell.com or call 713-621-3101.
Warning, if you've been diagnosed with high blood pressure or high cholesterol and are currently taking medications to offset these conditions, then you need to be aware of the nutritional side effects that they can have. Commonly prescribed cholesterol and blood pressure medications may lead to deficiencies in vitamins and minerals that are needed by your body to protect the function of your cardiovascular system. A deficiency in some of these nutrients may actually cause heart disease. The doctors at Town Center Wellness specialize in identifying nutritional deficiencies with state-of-the-art laboratory testing, not available in most doctors' offices. Protect your health today by calling Town Center Wellness at 281-240-2229. Town Center Wellness, 281-240-2229. Once again, Town Center Wellness, 281-240-2229.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Alternatives for Health and Wellness. My name is Dr. Osborne, your host. We've got Dr. Merritt and Dr. Davis also co-hosting with us. And tonight's topic is the hypothyroidism or thyroid disease. And we left earlier, we were talking about gluten and the impact that it could have on potentially creating an autoimmune reaction that would actually attack and affect the thyroid. I'd like to get into a little bit more tonight about how certain nutrients and how certain levels of nutrients can affect thyroid hormone production. As Dr. Merritt alluded to earlier, zinc and selenium deficiencies can have a profound impact on thyroid hormone production. But just to kind of take you on a shortened version biochemically of how the hormone is actually produced, it primarily requires an amino acid called tyrosine, and that particular amino acid combines with iodine, which is a mineral that we get in our diets by eating certain types of food, primarily seafood. And once we're there, we have to take that T4, which is what you commonly hear, or your doctor may have tested, that T4, which is the inactive form of thyroid. What that means is it doesn't really have any active ability to stimulate your metabolism, but it has to be converted inside your body's tissues to activated T3 or triiodothyronine, which is T3 is the active form of thyroid hormone. And that conversion requires selenium for that to happen. And so if a person has low levels of selenium or has a selenium deficiency, they may not be making that conversion work as well. And so it may not be the only cause, but it may be a large contributing factor to thyroid disease. And if a person doesn't have a selenium deficiency and they're making their T3 just fine, then we talk about, again, what Dr. Davis and Merritt alluded to earlier, which was you can have normal lab values, but those normal lab values don't always necessarily dictate that the patient is normal in the sense of not having symptoms. And that has to do with you can have normal T4, normal T3, and if you have a vitamin D deficiency, vitamin D actually is a hormone, but it binds to T3, okay, inside the cell itself and allows it to attach to the nucleus of your cell so that it upregulates or that it turns on the genes necessary to prime the metabolism. So if you have a vitamin D deficiency, that could be another way that you might have normal thyroid hormone levels in the presence of active thyroid disease. Just through that particular mechanism. Now, vitamin A also helps that reaction occur. So vitamin A or vitamin D deficiencies could actually lead to or contribute to low thyroid levels. Do either of you measure vitamin A or vitamin D on a regular basis, Dr. Davis?
We do with the SpectraCell analysis. I use that very, very consistently with testing for the thyroid, and then I also may test that separately as well. I actually agree with that quite a bit. We found vitamin D to enhance the thyroid function as well as selenium, zinc, and we use iodine supplementation as well. So I think it's very important to remember that when you finally make the diagnosis and you treat it, that you do look for the underlying causes and that you try to help the body itself to help that T3 conversion to occur. But I think this is a good time to bring up possibly the treatment for an underactive thyroid. I know lots of people who are treated very well with the medications currently that are synthetic, the Synthroid and Levoxyl Levothyroid. But then there are just as many who are undertreated and don't really have a good response to those particular medications. So there are pharmacists who will compound preparations of a T4 and T3 preparations or just additional T3, or there's Armour Thyroid available. And all of those medications can enhance that T4, T3 response where you can actually start to improve the symptoms. Again, I would see many patients coming back who would be treated on Synthroid and Levoxyl, and they would tell me, well, gosh, I just really don't feel very different. And I would check their levels, and sure enough, their numbers were getting better, but they weren't. And that's the essential part that we were missing at that time, is we weren't looking for that T4, T3 conversion to happen. And if they weren't having enough T3, they certainly weren't starting to have more energy. They weren't being able to lose that weight that they wanted to, and just were very frustrated with their treatment. And a lot of them would actually just stop taking the medication. They said, well, it doesn't help me, so why should I take it?
Yeah, Dr. Merritt, how about yourself? What else are you doing to measure, aside from just looking at thyroid hormones, nutrient-wise?
Well, I always approach a patient with, what are they missing? What do they have too much of? You know, as far as what's in their body that shouldn't be, how can we get it out? And again, people in this area, because I've done SpectraCell for 12 or 15 years now, very low on minerals, very low on iodine. Very low on antioxidants. And so my first approach, unless they're just way out of range with a very, very high TSH, is to do 4 to 6 weeks of intense nutrient supplementation. And there's a lot of different ones that people can use. There's no right or wrong one, but I generally do that and try and throw some kelp or iodine or some form of iodine in the mix so that that mineral is taken care of too. And then for the ones that need to be treated, I did an experiment a few years ago when I was just kind of learning about all this the natural thyroid approach, and I tried to put everybody on Armour, and you can't do that. Older people don't necessarily do as well. It's also, Armour's made from pigs, and so there's more T3 than there are in humans, and so sometimes you come back to having to do like the compounded ones with the amount of T3 and the T4 in it that you want, or using Levoxyl plus Cytomel. There's so many different ways you can do it, but the bottom line is no one person is the same, and no one person has the same toxins in them. No one person is missing the same nutrients, but you have to look at all of it. And now after listening to you tonight, I'm going to have to look at the gluten and the inflammation pathway too, because I think that may be a very important approach. I think from our discussion last time, we talked about the methylation gene mutations that 50% of the population has, and I just wonder, since those also cause inflammation, now that we have methyl, folate to add to our armamentarium, how much inflammation or reduction are we going to see, and how is it going to affect thyroid? I'm already watching that. I don't have an answer yet, but I think it's going to be a very interesting year.
Absolutely. On a side note as well, as we look at these methylating genes and we look at adding in methylated folate, methylated B12 to help those genetic variants work a little bit better, there actually is a direct link between elevations in homocysteine levels and the inhibition of retinoic acid synthesis, which is retinoic acid being a form of vitamin A. And as I was discussing earlier, we know that vitamin A is necessary to bind with T3 on the nuclear receptor to activate it. So it kind of gives you just another link to follow, measuring that homocysteine level because it can block vitamin A synthesis. Can just give you another tool to measure whether or not that individual, they may have normal vitamin A levels, but that elevation in homocysteine is just, once again, just another inhibitory factor for that binding process to work. Additionally, nutritionally, we see a lot of essential fatty acid deficiencies. Essential fatty acids, when we talk about the essential ones, we're talking about two main chemicals, the EPA and the DHA. stands for eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, but these are the types of fats that we call the omega-3 fats. For those of you, most of you have probably heard that term. Omega-3 fats